Welcome to Eat, Sleep, Wine, Repeat, a podcast for all you wine lovers who, if you're like me, just cannot get enough of the good stuff. I'm Yanina Doyle, your host, brand ambassador, wine educator, and sommelier. So stick with me as we dive deeper into this ever-evolving, wonderful world of wine. And wherever you are listening to this, cheers to you. Hello, wine friends, and welcome back to another episode where I am pleased to say, after such great feedback several episodes ago when Master of Wine student Anna Spooner took us on an overall journey of the Southern Rhone Valley, well, today we are getting stuck into one specific cru, and that, my friends, is Lirac. Now, I know for many of us, when we crack open a Côte de Rhône, we know we're getting that juicy fruit, that smooth sipping experience, and you always get these really friendly tannins. But here is the thing, there are incredible subregions to explore, especially the hidden gems known as the crus. And this, if you know the right cru, can give you great value. So today, I'm very excited to shed some light on one of these very underrated crus that definitely deserves a spot on your Rhone radar. We are talking about well-priced wines crafted by family-run operations in stunning landscapes. Plus, they're all about sustainability, either organic or heading that way. So today, I'm talking with Rodolphe Depan, the winemaker and head of the family at Château de Montfaucon, who's devoted himself to revitalizing his winery's reputation, which has led to the knock-on effect of raising the reputation for the Lirac region as a whole. Now, don't forget, you can go to my show notes where you'll find a link to the transcript, and equally, there will be other links to take you to Lirac's website and Van Rhone. However, I shall let Rodolphe introduce you properly to the wonderful wines of Lirac. So, Rodolphe, I want to start with a very important question, which I always want to ask my guests. How did you specifically decide to become a winemaker? What grabbed you? Was it your destiny or was there a moment?
It's a bit because of the estate. And I don't know if you know Montfaucon. Montfaucon is a very old estate. There is a castle from the Middle Age, 11th century years old. And my parents said, we are four boys. I have three brothers. And said, it'd be good if someone take care of the estate, that the history can keep on going. And it happened to arrive on me and to study agriculture. And I did study general agriculture. And I didn't know what I was going to do. And where I study agriculture, I realized that I was really attracted by wine. And because it was a different product than all the other products, like wheat, potatoes, whatever, the market will decide the price and you couldn't really express yourself. And in wine, you could at least decide what kind of wine you want to make, and you can also sell to the people that understand what you're doing. So with wine, you can do the viticulture, you can make the wine and sell. So it was very interesting. And then I dive in this world because I didn't know it very well and get really passionate by it. I don't know.
Well, you talk about getting really passionate. You know, I've done my research a little bit. You've gone and worked at Henschke, which I've gone to visit many years ago and seen those incredibly gnarly vines wrapped around the
Hill of Grace.
Posts by the, oh my God, by the church. An iconic moment. So you've worked at Henschke. You've come back to the Rhone. You've worked at Vaux de Telegraph, which many people will know is an iconic, another iconic winery. So you've picked some pretty nice places to get some experience, right?
Yeah, I got very lucky. In fact, after my engineering study of agriculture, I decided to travel. I always like to travel and to see what happened over this wine world that was moving, especially in the new country. So I did a master in UC Davis, California.
Ah, okay.
And that's the reason the professor I was working for was connected to the Henschke family, and he just advised, you should contact them. And after I finished my master, I contact them and they say, welcome. And it was one of the most and best experience of my life, discovering all the work they're doing over there. And I was very impressed and probably learned a lot also because they had a very also scientific attitude in their viticulture and winemaking. Everything was done with, you know, was thought and done. And it was very good for me to learn. And plus, they are so generous and lovely people. They came last vintage to visit me again. So we have
fantastic.
We have a very strong relation since I've lived with them over 6 months.
And actually, I suppose it's a pretty good winery as well to contrast with the Rhone, with the fact that they focus on Shiraz and they do Grenache. And there, these are the main grape varieties growing in Larac. So was that actually quite an interesting contrast to be working with those same grape varieties, but seeing them grow in completely different terroir, different climate?
Yes, it was very interesting to see that. And although I didn't have much experience in Larac at that time because I was not installed as a winemaker, I hadn't any winery at that time. But what I learned the most is the adaptation of your area where you live and where the vines grow and what you do to maybe take the best out of it with all the constraints you may have in the environment. And they were doing super well to do that. And also to keep all that genetics, all vineyards, because there is something special with that in Australia, ungrafted vines and so on.
So after that experience, was it the family calling saying, come back to Larac, come back to Larac? What got you back to this crew of the Côte d'Aronne?
Yes, my father wasn't a winemaker. He was just looking after the vineyards. He used to work in a bank. And he really asked that one of us come back and take care of the estate. And so that's the way everything started. But after all this experience, and he was selling his grape to the cooperative, I say, I come back if I can build a winery, rebuild a winery, and make my own wine, because it's the final achievement after growing grapes, making your own wines. You put your identity and your philosophy and your thinking in the wine you want to make.
Amazing. And for anybody who doesn't know about Château de Montfaucon, which is where you are, the wines you're making, I mean, this is one of the wineries that's really lifted Larac up, which is incredible. So can we talk about Larac? Well, you are very welcome. Everybody go drink that, but everyone just drink some Larac wine. So where is Larac?
So Larac is in the Rhone Valley in the southern part. And for the people who knows Avignon, Provence, you go 17 kilometers north and it's on the west bank. And sometimes to help to locate it, I just say it's just in front of Châteauneuf-du-Pape, the other side of the river. So you see Châteauneuf-du-Pape, and then you cross the Rhone, you're in Larac. And also south of it, there's another quite famous appellation called Tavel, where it has a border in between Larac and Tavel. And there's, a few growers from Tavel who are making Larac. As now we have many growers from, and it's a good sign, from Châteauneuf investing in Larac also.
So tell me about Larac as a size. Obviously, I think we've already piqued everyone's interest. You've mentioned two very well-known crews for what they're doing, which is giving people an idea, of course, how good Larac can be. What is the size of Larac in comparison to some of the other crews or the other areas in the Rhone Valley or even anywhere in the world, so people can maybe have an idea?
Larac size is not a huge size. Like it's about, I don't know if it talks, it's about 1,200 hectares. And it's probably the same size of Gigondas or Tavel. Roughly. But we not all the wine are declared as Larac. Some are just sold as Côte d'Aronne. So at the moment, we are around between 800 and 900 hectares revendicate, I don't know if I can say it this way, as Larac. In terms of production, it will be around 2.5 million bottles a year, around that, maybe three on the very, if we are good to sell, 3 million. So it's not so big. It's about a third of the size of Châteauneuf. And that's why you can see many more Châteauneuf du Pape all over the world than Lirac here. You have to look for it.
And when did Lirac become a cru? So before it was a village of Côte d'Aron, and then it became a cru and got recognized. When was that?
It was in 1947. It was the 14th October of 1947. And it was one of the earliest cru, just after Châteauneuf. The three, you know, in the Rhône was Châteauneuf, Tavel, and also Hermitage, and Côte du Rhône came in the 30s. And Lirac was quite early, right after the Second World War II, but way before Gigondas, who was in 74, I think, or 72. Kéran, Rasto, Vinsobre, but way before that. So it's quite old cru.
Okay, so what does Lirac taste like? And I say, what does it taste like? Of course, you make red, white, and rosé. So I'm kind of leaving this over to you to describe everything you want to.
Yeah, what is important is the Lirac was the cru who had the three colors. The first cru in the Rhône, you were allowed to produce the three colors, red, white, and rosé. Nowadays, red is like 85% of the production. White is growing. There's a really a progression in white. It moved, when I was president, it moved to 8% to 12, 14% now. And rosé is going down. I don't know why. Yeah.
That's interesting, considering rosé is growing in the world. But okay.
It's going down, probably because maybe Tavel is next to it. So there's a lot of producers who prefer make rosé, their Tavel, and they choose Lirac for making their red and white.
One thing I was just going to say is a lot of the rosé from Lirac is often better value, very similar quality, great fruit, but because it hasn't, again, got the more famous name of Tavel, for anyone trying to find a really good value rosé, dry rosé as well, everyone.
With some nice intensity also. It's not a rosé like Provence. Usually the juice has acids on skin, so it has a nice intensity. And it's a rosé that I know not many people do that, but that can age too. It has a potential. You can, if you forgot a new cellar, you can drink it 1 or 2 years after and you can still have enjoy.
Oh, I do love it when you forget about wine and then it just improves perfectly. They're the best moments.
Can give you a good surprise. And it was, I remember one of my first tasting of rosé when I was starting in 95. There is the Chateau Segrillès, Jean-François de Régis, who his father created the appellation, was the founder. I asked him this question, can rosé age? And give me a bottle of 74. So that was 20 years rosé at that time. And I still remember the taste. It was just magnificent. And what I can say about Lirac has his own characteristic. I think because of its location on the west side, and you have a range of mountains on the west and a lot of forest all around. And also it sits a lot of sandy soil, calcareous soil. I think I know it's very trendy to say that, but it has its own freshness.
No, yeah, okay. You're allowed to say that.
And the wines have a special touch, very smooth, a lot of finesse. And I like to say that, I always say that, I don't know if it's correct, but that among all the cru, the Rhône Valley cru, Lirac would be the most Burgundian style cru. Like, it has its own intensity, the Rhône intensity, with a lovely touch and balance in the mouth. That's the way I have the character. And I bring you a map. Look.
Okay.
You see this map?
Sorry, no one listening. You're going to have to get your own map, but I've got a map right now, so show me.
So you have the Rhône on the north. All the pink are where the vines are, and all the green you see are range or forest. And Lirac is surrounded with a lot of wood that bring also that help contribute to keep the biodiversity, but also this special freshness.
Because there is like 2,500 hectares of woodlands and forest. So not just a little bit of wood, a lot of wood.
Yeah, it's a good sign. You know, I usually call Lirac the sleeping beauty because it has an incredible history and also incredible terroir, and you can make fantastic wines. But it has a bit forgotten, probably because the grower slept a bit for a time. We are not that dynamic to promote their wines. But because of this, they didn't need to extend their vineyards. So they keep all the forest and all the wood. And now it's very important because in other very famous crew, the grower wanted to extend their vineyards to develop because they had the demand, where we didn't have. So we keep all that forest, wood, and potential of that. And now we realize that it is very important to have all that around us. And it helps to keep the style of the wines.
And does this impact the harvest time? I think I was reading a little somewhere where by having all this woodland, it can influence the harvest?
Yes, because then in some vineyards, when you have forest nearby or wood, sometimes you have shade earlier, so it postpones the harvest. In Lirac, you have also some valleys, small narrow valleys, you know, the one of Saint-Aubin, and the vineyards are just in the middle of this narrow valley, so they have less insolations and of the sun. And when the sun rises, also less warmer conditions. So that slowed down the maturity of the grape.
Right. Yeah, because it's very emblematic, this Saint-Aubin, isn't it? So that is giving the added freshness, you think, because of cooling things down, adding the shade.
Yeah.
Is that why? Okay. That's super, super interesting.
I really recommend if you're in the area to go and visit. To me, it's a very mystic place. And it's a old cave. There is an old cave where hermits have been living over 300 years there. It's beautiful to see. It's open 3 days in a year, the Monday of Easter. There's a pilgrimage for the 15th of August. And there in September, there's a probably heard about in France, we have the Day of Patrimoine, and they are open. You can visit these caves, which is also, there is still some celebration.
Gosh, okay, super interesting. So those are the 3 dates. I mean, so if you can't make those dates, although actually I'm really going to note them down and see if I can make that happen, is this a good place to, in between drinking, hike, climb, just take in the nature?
If you go to the syndicate in Lirac, where the syndicate, we have a home there, and you ask a way to get the key, and the president is very happy to take people and show the area. If you cannot find him, his name is André Richard, and he's a vigneron, and he's a lovely guy who is in charge of the associations to take care of that hermitage. You can also, there's a nice pathway to climb to arrive at this cave chapel. It's in a rock and it's just beautiful.
Gosh, okay. Okay, that's a huge thing.
Yeah, and from there, you really understand the Lirac vineyards because you can see all the vineyards, but all the nature all around. And that gives you a good feeling of what Lirac wants to deliver.
Okay. So once we've absorbed all of the mystical nature, we've seen the forests, we've seen the caves, we've come to visit some wineries, we bought some wine, it's in our backpack or whatever, you know, and we're thinking, and now we're at home, we've taken it home to try and bring this experience. Are there some traditional foods, traditional recipes, things that people are drinking with, probably most likely the red Lirac, but even white, you know, is there some things that have to be paired together?
Yeah, of course. Well, because of the three colors, I would say Lirac is quite versatile. You can adapt to many foods. But for the reds, I think lamb works perfectly. The local meat, the gigot d'agneau. I don't know how to translate that.
We'll go with that. That's fine. It probably doesn't have one.
It's delicious. Also with the cotelette, you know, on the barbecue. But Lirac red wines work with also red meat, beef, but also poultry, like duck or guinea fowl.
Yes. It's fresher, right? It's smoother. Yeah.
The Lérac ones can have this finesse that match well with that. And I really recommend also you to taste some of the whites. They really have their own expression. And they're made mainly with Clairette, Grenache, Roussan, and Bobulinck. And because of all the forest, the sand, the location, the Lérac wines, that's a bit technical, but they have a pH that is a lower. So
beautiful acidity.
Yeah, a little more acid than most of the other wines in the area. And so that gives a special freshness. So they match very well, of course, with all the fish like sea bass or sea bream, but also the cheeses.
You say that almost like, yes, it's going with the cheeses.
Yeah, the goat cheese, it's perfect. Yeah.
Okay. And of course, as well, you know, you've mentioned that these are all going to be blends, and actually many of those grape varieties that you've mentioned, they can give some texture, but also lots of freshness and acidity. And so hence why, okay, that's super interesting to know.
And you see that freshness in the whites. So you can parallel that you will find it with the reds. Of course, it depends of the winemaker. You know, when you make wines, you try to put what you like, you emphasize in what you like. Some likes very strong, rich reds. They will go in that style of winemaking. But if you respect what the land gives you, you will have naturally this amazing balance, freshness. And I think it's one of the key to Lérac.
So you mentioned for everybody, you've got the River Rhône running through on the western side of this. This is where Lérac is. And literally on the eastern side is Châteauneuf-du-Pape. So that is the major difference, is considering they're very similar. So quality could be very similar, but the bigger, bolder style of the Rhône Valley is going to be found in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, whereas the slightly perhaps more elegant, fresher style is Lérac. Is that fair to say?
That's a good definition. I think often I like to say that in terms of quality, they are the same level, but there are different expressions. And because when you look at it in Châteauneuf and Lérac, we grow the same grape, roughly. Some of the soil are very similar. There's a lot.
You have the pudding stones, don't you? The little pebbles.
We have the three major soil that you find in Châteauneuf, the sand. And there is sand in Châteauneuf, like 40% of the soil in Châteauneuf is sand, but we have probably more in Lérac. We have the pebble stone, you know, the big galley in some area in Lérac, and also the calcareous area along the reef and the range of mountains that we have in the west. But the expression is different because being on the west, we have less sunshine, and we have the range of mountains that protect when the sun goes down, and all the influence of the forest give a different expressions.
And are you also getting the influence, I'm assuming, of the Mistral wind coming from the north? It's still coming through the vineyard in Lérac, cooling things down significantly, right?
That's perfect. That's exactly
even
that.
Even more.
Yeah, even more. And because of the... if you look at the picture, I'm sorry, the Rhône is making a loop on north. So it goes through that and take that fresh air and put it all along the vineyards.
I see the map, everyone. Listen, anyone who doesn't understand, quickly Google, get yourself a wine map of Lérac or the Rhône and you'll understand. So actually, you've compared certainly the soils, you've talked about the same varieties, and we're now also focusing a bit more on red. We actually haven't clarified. I assume many people will know the grape varieties of the Rhône Valley, but this is Grenache, this is Syrah, Mourvèdre, maybe a little bit of Sanso. Have you got a very specific amount, minimum, that Grenache has to be in the blend, or is there a little bit more flexibility?
That's one of the differences with Châteauneuf. Châteauneuf is very free. You can do whatever you want. Where in Lérac, we have a little bit more rules. We have some in the reds. We have four major grapes that we have to use, which is Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre. And those ones have to be over 60%. And also we have a rule where Syrah and Mourvèdre has to be at least 25%. So that makes some restrictions in our blend. And also Lérac has to be a blend. You need to have at least two grape, where in Châteauneuf, you can make 100%. they have more freedom, which I like too.
So when you say there has to be at least two grapes, it's most likely, if it's just two, it's going to be Grenache and Syrah or Grenache and Mourvèdre. Is that?
Yes.
At least.
At least, yeah. Yes.
Yes. Okay. So that's super interesting. Now, what I want to do is just mention and talk a little bit about what's actually happening out in the vineyards, because there seems to be a lot more of a focus on this environmental charter. How does that make this region a little bit more unique, having this environmental charter that the winemakers are signing up to?
Yeah, the charter, I've started that charter because the location, we are in the middle of the Rhône Valley, where, you know, it's a major axis of traffic. There's highways, and also it's an area where companies developing, and also there's more of also people coming to living in the area because the sun of Provence is attractive. We realized that we needed to protect our terroir, because I say there's a lot of aggression of new companies coming, you know, industrial area. And we decided, and I think that preserving, protecting our terroir is important for the future. So we decided to make that charter, and where we incite people to plant more trees, to keep the trees, the forest, plant edge, and also we try to help them to be into certified organic viticulture. The other prospects of that was to be conscious of our activity as an influence on the water resource. So the idea to push people to go in organic farming was to use less pesticides who can pollute the water down below. And it's very important, as we are a farmer and we want to keep our landscape beautiful, but we want also to keep the water resource where it belongs to everybody. So that's the two major points of all our work.
How many of the winemakers in Larac have signed this environmental charter? Is it everybody, or it's something that's growing and evolving?
It's free, but the idea is you want to be part of it. So we push it and we communicate. And nowadays, we know that we are over 50% people are under organic farming, and 15 is on the way too, is in conversion. So we are nearly around 80% under a green label. So it has a good influence on the way of doing the farming, the agriculture. And also the customer, they ask it now. They like to drink good wines, but they look a bit further, that it also preserves the land. And that's very important.
For sure. The younger consumer more than ever wants to know the story behind the wine, where it came from, social responsibility, environmental responsibility. Absolutely. So it's nice to see that Larac, that you guys together as a appellation have really put that at the forefront. So the organic farming is massively on the rise. Biodynamics, is that something that many of the wineries are also embracing, or not as much?
Yeah, that's we made a consult, you know, a sondage, and biodynamic now it's around 34%. It's growing too, so it's really into the trend. And luckily, it's good numbers, but we have to say that our climate make it really easy. You know, with the Mistral, we have not many low rainfalls, so it's not that difficult. So I hope that one day we'll be 100%, and I think it's possible.
Love that. Well, also, many of your winemakers in Larac have HVE certification as well. So what is this? What's HVE?
Yeah, I know the main principle, but I am myself under organic farming. But HV have some principle of, it means haute valeur environnementale. Can you understand that? High value of environment. So
there we go. I prefer the English version.
Yeah. And that's what he say. So it's a principle where you have three level, 1, 2, 3. And of course, you may want to start with 1 or 2 and to achieve a number 3. And you have 4 pillars. And first will be to take care of biodiversity. So you may want to plant edge trees, also keep grass in your vineyards. That's good for the soil and also the life under and on the top. you also have a pillar that you be careful on your spraying. They call it FT, and this of frequency of treatment spraying. So you have to be careful how many spray you do. You have another pillar of the amendment. I'm looking for the words of what you put in your soil.
Okay.
And they push you to put more organic than chemicals, what you give to the vineyards to eat, you know. And then the fourth one is the management of water. Where if you irrigate, that you will use only low consumption system, like dripping, you know. So that's the four pillars, the HV. And of course, in function of your investment, of what you choose, you're going to be number two or number three.
But it's amazing that you've got so many winemakers focusing on organics. They've signed the environmental charter. They might have HVE. So it's wonderful to see that kind of growth. But I suppose when you're surrounded by the mystical forest, the nature, the beauty, and this is, you know, as well, I suppose we haven't actually mentioned a Mediterranean climate, and you've got lots of sunshine as well. You want to take care of nature. It kind of goes probably hand in hand as well. So it's good to see that that's rising even more.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit less restrictive than organic, where in organic, for example, for spraying, you can use only copper and sulfur. So you may have other products which are allowed. But what is interesting, it has all these biodiversity recommendations to preserve. So preserve the age, plant trees, and that's an interesting point of it. And so people move to that. And maybe further move to organic farming. It's a step, you know, it's a step to go.
And what is the future for Larac? I mean, that's a big question, right?
The future is, we say the sun shine for everybody. And I hope that the future for Larac is going to be better and better, because first, we see that a lot of people are investing in Larac, especially growers from Châteauneuf, because they realize the terroirs are extraordinary. And they come with their dynamic also, because they have their own clientele, and they're going to promote Larac. And I really also see that the style of the wine we make this side of the river is really what people are looking for. A lot of finesse, easy to enjoy with a nice intensity. And also, I must say, some quite attractive price. I mean, it's a very good value. For
money talks. Money does talk.
Yeah, so sometimes. And it's a tiny, it's not a big appellation, but you can find a lot of delicious wines. So, and if the press and you talk about more Larac, that's definitely going to help us.
Everybody, buy a bottle of Larac. Go visit Larac. Talking of visiting Larac, so we mentioned Avignon, which I did a quick Google search. Apparently in this, well, an hour ago, it would have taken about 22 minutes to drive from Avignon to Larac. Is that probably the best place to start from, fly into? How do we get to Larac? What's probably the best way?
Yeah, I think the best way, come to Larac in the, you have a few options. If you come to spend a week in the area like this, you know, you're in the middle of Provence and there's many, many things to see all around. Stop in Avignon or staying in Avignon. If you are more a city person, it's perfect. And then you can do trips all around, or you can also come on that area. There's a lot of gîtes, but visiting the area, you know, we are close also to the Pont du Gard, to Avignon, visit Châteauneuf. If you're interested in wine, there's many crew to visit all around. Spending 2-3 days in the area would be perfect. I recommend to go to the syndicate, where they have a selection of most of the producer, so you can taste. You can taste all the different quality of the wines, the different producer, and make your selection where you want to go and visit. And they can give you good recommendation. Also in Larac, there's a few trails, hiking trails, where you can do, there's two.
Yeah, the trails.
Mm. Yeah. And the surrounding, you know, jump the other side, you're interested enough. So definitely a nice region to visit. And I can recommend another date. Each year, there is a what we call a ballade. Do you understand that? A ballade. It's a walk into the vineyards. And in Larac, there's four villages. It's Larac, Saint-Laurent-des-Arbres, Roquemaure, and Saint-Geniez-de-Comolas. They make the vineyards are located on those four village appellations. Each year, it's around in May, and this year is going to be the 25th of May. There's a confrérie, a brotherhood something, who organized a ballade, a walk on among the vineyards, but it's a gastronomic ballade.
Now you're talking.
Yeah. It means you walk 1 kilometer, then you have a stop and you can taste all the whites, and you have also a good lunch made by a star Michelin chef. And you have about 4 or 5 stops. So you start with appetizer, entrance, main, cheese, course. And you can discover all the different wines in situations with good meals, good dishes, and in the vineyard. And you see, they may be going through some very nice area. It's a good way to discover the appellation. And each year, it moves village to village. So it's quite nice.
Oh, that's amazing. So basically, you need to come for 4 years in a row to make sure you've done every single one. This could possibly be the best walk in the world. Walk, wine, food. What?
I hope so. But
you've sold it. Oh, no. Oh.
I have.
Tell me.
One of my importer, who is a friend, because we did study together in California, and he came 1 year, and now he's going every year. He fly in to do it. He just love it. And he's a winemaker, he's a wine importer. He just enjoyed it.
So caveat, everyone, it's addictive.
Yeah.
Be warned, if you come to Lerac for this walk once, you may never be able to stop.
Yeah.
May the 25th, right?
Yes.
This year.
Of course, there are producer and there are people, so you can ask questions, they explain. It's not a big thing, but around 200, 300 people, so you need to reserve. Yeah, it has to be a trip. So if you're in the area on around that date, definitely something to discover the vineyard.
I love that. I will find the link. I'll ask for you to send it to me or someone to send it to me. And I'm going to put that, everybody, in the show notes. And also any extra things that we think of that people should know and take a link to, I'm going to put in the show notes so everyone can become more acquainted with Lerac. Rodolphe, thank you so much. Is there anything else that we need to cover that anyone needs to know about, or are we good to go?
I think we're good, but just thank you to help to discover this jewel. Lerac to me is a jewel, a sleeping beauty, but it's getting, and thank you for helping us. We must thank you a lot for that.
Oh, well, I appreciate your descriptions. I think you've got us all inspired. So, right, I'm going to have to go now and get myself a bottle of Lerac. And I'll see over on your side of the pond very soon, maybe for that walk.
I hope so. I'll definitely be there.
Cheers. Speak to you soon.
Bye.
Take care. Thank you. Bye. I hope on your next wine purchase, you are now going to head out and find yourself some Lerac. So go and talk to your local independent wine shop or search online. And if you are in the UK, I know you can get a bottle of biodynamic Lerac from family producer Domaine de Carabinier from my sponsor of this season, Wickham's Wine, who deserve all the shout outs possible for their wine selection. And they also have a rosé wine from Domaine Mabi. So don't forget, on your first order, you can get 10% off using the code EATSLEEP10. But now to finish off with a wine quote from Michelin star chef Paul Bocuse, who was born in Lyon, which is in the Rhône Alps region of France. And translated, he said something like this: "The true beauty of wine lies in its authenticity, in the respect for the land where it was born." So on that very reflective note, may your wine journey be filled with wine steeped in stories crafted by passionate individuals who prioritize sustainability, mindful of nurturing our lands for future generations to enjoy. Now, sneak peek into next week, I'm talking with Chilton Firehouse's head sommelier, Beatrice Bessie. Also, International Wine and Spirit Challenges 2024 Emerging Talent in Wine Hospitality winner. And we will virtually be hopping across to the enchanting island of Sicily. So make sure you are subscribed to this podcast and press the bell to make sure that you are getting all the notifications and don't miss out on next week. Now, share this podcast with your wine-loving friends. And most importantly, pour yourself that well-deserved glass of Lurac wine. Until next week, wine friends, cheers to you.